Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 188, being recorded on the 19th of July, 2017, with special guest, Rafael Dominguez. And we're here with, normally I'd say we're on Skype, I have so-and-so, but today we have Russell, Kale, and Rafael right here with me in a room, which explains some of the background noise that you might hear today. But we're all here in Las Vegas for a special Microsoft conference. We'll talk about that in a minute. But since we were all here, we thought we'd do the podcast live. And Rafael was really gracious enough to help us out again with some of his insights into the Azure space. So before we get to him, let's talk about some of the updates that we have. So what do we got, guys? You know, there's a few updates that we put in the show notes. Anyone in particular you like, Russell?
Well, I guess the one that kind of makes sense for me to talk about is the UK regions and the logic apps coming out there. Not much more to say than that, though. Just that it's available now in the UK south and west. So it's been something a lot of customers are using now. It's had a great uptake in the market. So nice to see it there.
Yep. And talking about logic apps, a nice integration between Video Indexer and logic apps that just came out. I think we talked about Video Indexer a while ago. It's that cool piece of software that takes all the cognitive services that Azure has to offer and combines them into a really easy system where you can just upload a video or an audio file and it extracts all the text out of it and puts a lot of metadata out of that file. And now that's being added to Logic App, so you can create like your own little workflow, you know, as you, if you have in your company, like for example, like we would have, right? We record a video, then it would go to a second step, and then it might go to an approval step, and be someone to clean it up, and then it finally gets posted. So now they integrated the Video Indexer with Logic App to be able to do some of those cool few things.
I think it's like kind of a common pattern to, like, you talk about like AI and how basically it's not like we don't have an AI service. We have a series of services that make up what AI is, right? So the combination and, similar to blockchain, right? So we do the same thing there, right? We're bringing a bunch of services together that have existed for many years in various kind of disciplines, but bringing those together into one kind of cohesive kind of unit makes this new service, composite service.
Yeah, yep. You're seeing it across all the product suite as well. It's not just in Azure. You're seeing it all through Office 365 as well. And what I quite like is you're just using the product and you're going along doing something, and then suddenly you find, actually, there's a whole load of extra information that's been provided for you. You know, you've not gone off and told it to go and do stuff. And in the Video Indexer now, it was keywords and where those time slots were, but it's now coming up and, you know, you've got the ability to do all the sentiment analysis in there as who's speaking, so it's doing facial recognition to see who's speaking at what part of the video as well.
Yes.
It's just amazing how powerful that stuff gets without you having to actually go off and program it.
That's definitely some of the advantages. I think only Microsoft is very well suited to do something like that. They can take all the services that they have to offer and create a higher level abstraction. It's a matter of finding a pattern, right? Everybody had to write the same code, do the same thing over and over again. So you know what? We'll bring it all together and put it together into a nice little package. What else we got in this week? Let's see. Oh, how about this artificial intelligence tunes Azure SQL database? This one's nice.
Yeah, so again, it's the same theme. So we've got services sitting on the back end that are monitoring what kind of calls are being made between your application stack and the SQL database on the back end. And if you're, you know, sending commands that have don't have bound variables in there, it's going to point that out for you and highlight it as a security risk. I thought it had been doing that for a while, but obviously it's a new feature.
I think you're talking about the cross-site scripting attack, right? Or the SQL injection attack is what you were talking about. Yes, which is a good one. Actually, I was referring to another item, which is and then the artificial intelligence also automatically tunes SQL Server now. So if you have a SQL Server database, and you know, you don't have to worry about setting, you know, looking at the indexes, seeing the query plan, see what's delayed, it's doing that automatically. It's automatically scanning your database and tuning it for you. So that's the one that we were referring to. But coming to the one that you mentioned, which is the Security Center has a new feature there. I think that's the one you mentioned, Russell?
Right, yeah, sorry.
You know what? You may be right. It says over here that this is a new update for tools that detect SQL injection attacks, like a Security Center being one of those tools. But yeah, you're right. Maybe it was there. It's been there for a while, and they probably added some new features to it. So, you know,
and the same with the indexing one. I'm sure there's been some functionality around suggested indexes in the past as well.
But, yes. I think this is where they do it now in the background. You just kind of do it, you know, for you.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, it keeps expanding. It's kind of like organic, or like it's continuing to just grow, is the Azure Security Center. You know, the advancement of that thing to be able to provide even like deeper telemetry, as well as like aggregates, to make it more easy to kind of spot big problems. If it's a security risk, if it's a you know, performance issue, these kind of things. Obviously, the Azure Security Center is more focused on the security aspects, but it's a common thing, right? We're providing tons of telemetry back to the system now, and how do we make it digestible to people instead of just throwing, you know, mountains of data at them, you know?
Okay, and then there's another update for Azure Data Lake tools now being added to Visual Studio Code. So I guess we never told our listeners why we were in Vegas. Maybe worth mentioning that, and then we'll get into this one update. So we're all here for a special Microsoft conference called Ready. It's an internal conference where sort of like the internal version of Build, I like to call it, right?
Yeah.
Where the field and the sales folks all get together here in Vegas to learn about all the new stuff that's coming out. And because it's all new and confidential stuff, we can't say much about it on the podcast just yet. But I think, suffice to say, it's exciting times, right, for Azure. There's a lot of exciting stuff coming out here. And we hope that you will be able to divulge some of these things in the episodes to come. But it's a great investment from Microsoft's perspective. I mean, I can't imagine that this, I know there's upward of 20,000 people here this week. Yeah, that was kind of shocked, right? That they have 20,000 rooms in Vegas, but I guess they do.
They also have some partners here as well, which is what's very nice to see. So there are some of that kind of collaboration with the partners, ecosystem as well. So that was good to see.
No, that's great. You're right. Right. I did notice this. That's new, actually, right?
Yes.
They normally never had partners.
That's right.
It's supposed to be an internal conference, but yeah, we do have
just
nice
a fun fact about the hotel rooms. I was in the cab last night, and the topic came up about this. The guy is very native to Las Vegas and mentioned just in this area where we're at, which is basically the new version of like the Las Vegas Strip. I think he said it's upwards of 117,000 rooms that are available here, you know, in these hotels.
Wow.
Things are castles.
Wow. So you're contrasting to when we did the same event in Seattle, and that's, I think, the first time I met you a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Microsoft seems to take over the whole town, right?
Yes.
You can't move anywhere without Microsoft. Here, we don't even, like, make a dent on it.
Yeah, exactly. There's, like, we're, like, only one-tenth of the crowd around here at most.
Yeah.
Good point there, Russell. So, well, one of the things that I heard in the conference, at least, was that VS Code, Visual Studio Code, has really picked up, right? We heard that this morning in some of the keynotes. A lot of companies, even our, you know, competitors, are using Visual Studio Code, apparently, because it's such a, you know, such a convenient way for the code development. It's integrated with so many tools now. And one of the updates that came out this week was that Visual Studio Code has now been, they've added some more updates to work with Azure Data Lake. So it's nice to see that even the, you know, the Azure team is supporting Visual Studio Code natively, to be able to do things like, you know, I guess uploading, looking what's in your data lake, uploading files, things like that, you know. It's all built into Visual Studio Code now as extensions using that extension model that's there. So some really cool stuff.
Sure, just on Visual Studio Code, I'm sure everyone knows it's a cross-platform tool, which is really nice. So you can move to a Mac or a Linux machine and use the same tool. But it's like the go-to tool now for doing Node.js development as well. And I saw a session earlier on where they were showing the improvements that they've made there around IntelliSense support, and it's just really nice to use.
Yeah, the only thing I would comment is for the listeners out there, the VS Code, it's not something that's rocket science, I would call it, to even build an extension on top of it. So there's a big community out there building all kinds of extensions, Microsoft just being one of them,
right,
to plug our stuff in there. But you know, you shouldn't feel intimidated to say, like, hey, actually, this feature would be cool in there, to kind of approach it. It's not a super onerous kind of thing to put in there. And I would say the contrast being, like, okay, VS Code is cross-platform. It does all these really cool things. I would say it's less visual than something like Visual Studio proper, like Visual Studio 2017 or something. There's a lot more GUI elements that kind of come into that one, wizards and these kind of things, where VS Code is a bit more like command line. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that's where the power of VS Code is. It's not. It wasn't intended originally to be a full IDE. It was just like a very quick way of doing editing. And I think it was the same code they wrote for the web-based in the portal experience as well.
Monica.
Yeah, that's it. But the benefit of it, and it's following the same kind of pattern as VSTS, it's all built around having a really strong foundation, but making it really extendable.
Yep.
So the market and the community is what's adding all these nice features and making it such a powerful product.
Yeah. You know, one of the nice things of coming to Ready, that's the name of the conference, is that we get to meet a lot of the product team. As a matter of fact, many of the product team members that we've spoken to in the past on the podcast were here. This last week, we spoke to Rima Nemi and met her yesterday, so it was nice to catch up with her. She's, of course, the Cosmos DB GM. And then Christina Compi, who we spoke in the past about Java, running Java apps
on
a service environment. And she was here. We had a long chat with her about AOC, because that is something that we're considering for our customer as well. So it's nice to be, and then of course, now that Kale's with the product team, so we, you know.
Just an extension, just like Visual Studio Code extension.
I was going to say, the main reason for me coming was the session yesterday on blockchain that Kale and his colleague.
That was really amazing.
I had a chance to attend it. It was a good session.
Yeah. Highlight of my week.
Yes. It totally explained blockchain for me. Mm-hmm. And I hope that Molly does a similar one for public consumption. he should encourage him. I've tried to get him on the show, you know that.
Yeah,
a few times he's ignored me. So
he's kind of a busy guy.
Yeah, but he explained it so well, and I went from not understanding blockchain to getting ready to write Perplex. Together with Kale's session, which he did as well on some of the details of blockchain, which was cool. So Kale, you're going to do that meetup in New York, right, for blockchain? How's that going?
Yeah, we actually have a couple now. We can put the links out there. I don't know, did we share them last time?
I shared the one that we had last time, the Eventbrite link.
Yeah, we have one in July and one in August. So, yeah, if you're in the New York metro region or in the surrounding area there, feel free to come in. We have the links out there. It's free to join in. Typically, these have been well attended. I mean, upwards of between 50 and 100 people usually is what we see at these. So it'd be good to see people out there.
Well, the one thing that, not a secret, so we can say it, is that it was all Batman development. I was expecting some, you know, fancy C++ stuff or having to know some weird language for blockchain development. And it's just .NET, you know. So I guess if you're a .NET dev, you can do some triplet development, right? Right, Kale?
Yeah. And Marley's kind of has a lot of this stuff out there on GitHub already, like you mentioned. But yeah, I think the initial stage of what he's been kind of putting out there as a roadmap is it's built in C# right now. The idea is to basically extend that model so that you could do things like Java, so you could run a JVM up there and have a Java jar and all that kind of stuff up there. And then even go beyond to like Python and some of the other commonly used.
Yeah, we're going to support everything, right? We're not going to lock the subject. We're starting off with .NET because that's the position that we always start off with, and then we'll take it from there. That's cool. Okay, well, let's talk to our special guest, Rafael. And I'm sure everybody remembers Rafael. We've had him before on the show. And so welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Yes. And what's top of mind for you, Rafael? What have you been up to these days with your customers in the Azure space?
Well, so first of all, excited to be here at Ready. So thanks for inviting me back. It's been an amazing week already. A lot of excitement around the future for our platforms. It's been very exciting in meeting all the different colleagues, I guess, across the company. The networking part of this event
is a big part of it.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's been fun. So look, I've been looking like everybody else at the announcements, that some of the stuff that's come out already, as well as some of the things that are coming in the future. Of course, we cannot talk about the new stuff that we learned about this week, but something that I'm very excited about is our continued kind of support for the open source community and open source tooling and platforms. into everything we do, really, and Azure being such an open platform. So SQL Server 2017, for example, coming out later this year, there's an RC release that just came out. Again, that's going to be available on Windows and Linux at the same time.
That's
pretty exciting. So if you think about the potential of what that brings to our customers, whether on-prem, but particularly in Azure, it's not just going to be both, but it's going to be Docker ready. So you're going to be able to run SQL Server 2017 on a Docker container on Azure. And if you think about all this latest, you know, ransomware, the attacks that you see out there, so being able to reduce the attack surface on your applications is going to be critical going forward. Having interesting HA scenarios, like you have an application with a SQL backend on Windows servers that can have an HA into a Linux environment, for example, it's tremendous.
You can actually do that. You'll be able to integrate a Windows SQL with a Linux SQL.
With Linux SQL as an HA, absolutely, right. And that's.
I suppose the Linux SQL is binary protocol compatible with what we have today, right? It's no different, I suppose.
I don't know if it's going to be at 100% on day one, but I know that I've seen some of the high availability logs on that, and right. It's pretty exciting to think about Microsoft allowing that kind of scenario and putting our primary database into a SQL environment. I'm super excited about that. I just think that this is not your father's Microsoft anymore. This is a Microsoft 2.0 where we are actually making these huge investments to make sure that an open source platform is native and first-class citizen on Azure and everything we do, with Ubuntu and others included on Windows client and Windows 10, it's a shell. It's incredible. I'm super excited about that.
I think the thing there, just to follow on with that, is from my role working with blockchain, that whole community doesn't use a lot of Windows, to be honest. I mean, it's very much Linux kind of ecosystem there. But, you take the people, this huge army inside Microsoft who's working on all these services in Azure, some of them are more accustomed to using something like .NET or whatnot, and we've been able to kind of blend those two together, and it's not even really an issue. It's like, oh, well, if you want to use it, that's fine. You can build this out, just like you were mentioning with the products before. So as the components come online, it really doesn't matter, whether you're using .NET or whether you prefer to use something that's more like a Linux-based system or something built in that model, or even like a Node app or something like that. I mean, these are all really popular kind of frameworks that people are using. So I don't think you don't have to pick anymore. You can basically have it all, whichever one you want to use.
Yes, and the other thing that tied to that is the SQL Server running in Docker, right, in the Docker image.
It's huge,
right? Because that also runs on Linux, I believe, right?
It can run on Windows, too.
Oh, well, Windows, okay. Windows, yes. But, so now you even have that choice from a container perspective. You've got a little application that you need to run, maybe a SQL processing job or something. You can just fire up this container and run it and then tear it down.
Yep. And it ties back to using continuous integration into Visual Studio team services and, using Node to manage a lot of the code that you need to do for continuous integration on VS Code, right? Which is, again, pick your platform, you can run it anywhere. You can run it, and develop on your favorite language. And again, I'm just super excited about that.
And it seems Docker is kind of like the standard now for most of the tooling support for deployment. Yeah. So I went to a session on .NET 2.0 the other day, and again, it was all about being able to create these nice small images. And when you're building your Docker image, you just choose whether you want Linux or you want Windows.
Exactly. It's almost like a commodity now. I remember back 15 years ago, you guys remember, if you're working on a multi-tier application, it was like, oh, we got to set up SQL, even if it's a dev instance, days. If you have the server, right. and so you had to get through that. Now it's seconds.
Yes.
And you could just go do this thing really quick and then just destroy it. I don't need it anymore. I go do this other thing. It's amazing how quickly that is.
And by the way, you can do that on your laptop instead of having to spin up some server somewhere.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Right. You can run these containers on your laptop now.
We have been talking about, again, the integration of Azure and reducing attack surface, of course, through Docker containers and be able to be more mobile and just kind of preparing for those kinds of scenarios. If you think about having applications that are now Dockerized, where you bring it into a container, how quickly can you move them from one area to the other?
Recover. Oh, so if a particular node is infected, you
exactly,
don't care. You just
exactly,
throw it out of the water.
Just
and
right,
stuff.
Fell over very quickly. So those things seem to be easier when you talk about you're highly virtualized and containers just another level,
right.
Higher level of virtualization that you're doing for the application layer. So going back to Kale's point, the OS almost doesn't matter at that point, right? It's the application that you care about, the data. And if you're able to quickly fail over, quickly move it to another region, even within Azure, I think that's great value to our customers. So that's kind of what I've been thinking about a lot lately and how that technology that we're bringing to bear in our platforms are going to help mitigate and hopefully allow our customers to come back online much faster than they could potentially if you had to build new server, you know, physical server from scratch and stuff like that.
Now, our customers, is this a big distinguishing factor from, say, AWS or some of the other competitors? How is that viewed by your customers?
Well, the container technology is not, but I know we're doing some really cool stuff around, like, nested virtual machines.
Right.
I think that's public. So.
Yeah,
on Azure, so that's also very exciting to be able to spin up a virtual machine on Azure. Then if you had the density, right, if you have the power on the VM, being able to spin up more VMs inside of that. So if you think about creating DevOps scenarios, it just lends itself to all these new amazing capabilities. I think that's pretty unique with us with Azure, only because we're running Hyper-V underneath. And that allows for that nested virtualization that I haven't seen at least in other.
Yeah, I think the terms I've heard from some colleagues, they're public. This is not some sort of private thing. Is the scaling thing of, you mentioned it, Raphael, like the VM, like you could have a monster VM, and then inside of that be nesting a bunch of other virtual machines,
right.
or containers or this thing. So it's like the macro scaling versus micro scaling, and the trend in the industry is a bit more towards the micro-scaling aspect of saying, like, we don't need to worry so much about the VM as much. We're more about how can we make these containers dense and take advantage of, like, all the horsepower we have there. Instead of wasting CPU cycles, if the CPU is only 60% busy all the time, why is it not 80 or 90%? Because we want to squeeze as much as we can out of those virtual machines to make it economically, you know, viable for us.
Right. Very cool. So what about you, Russell? Raphael, anything else you want to share? I was going to ask Russell if he has anything from his customers that he's been working with recently.
No, I mean, we've been absolutely my customer focus on Office 365, right, which is another exciting part of the cloud, right?
So
which kind of runs on Azure.
That runs on Azure,
bit,
right? I always question
yeah, all that,
that
stuff, like SharePoint file, all that stuff, but it's kind of,
it's got its own environment.
It's its own environment in the back end, but it's like we solve the issue of globally distributed storage, right? So we're leveraging that in there, Active Directory, and having that authentication in the cloud or on prem, having that flexibility so that, again, you don't have to choose.
And you used to, in the past life, I'm just speaking for you, I think you used to do a lot of Exchange work, right? So, like,
I did.
Back when this was, like, a horribly, I won't say horribly, but a massively complex system to maintain, which kept getting more and more complex as
exactly.
the years went on.
Exactly. So now we're removing some of those complexities, Microsoft's dealing with that, and you just worry about making sure your users are happy.
Yeah.
That's great. How about you, Russell? Anything
yeah, I mean, I think again, that's a good point. I mean, most of the partners that I'm working with are going down the route of making sure their apps are supporting Azure AD. Getting a lot of questions about B2B and B2C as well, and that seems to be the default now when you're writing an app. So that's really good. The other thing, just to comment from here, you were talking about the WannaCry attacks and things. One of the sessions I came to here, which was quite valuable, wasn't necessarily about tech, it was just about the dark web. And that was really quite
right.
eye-opening and quite scary as well. I mean, the session, although it was delivered to an internal audience, it had to go through Microsoft Legal, and it had been filtered and validated and pared quite down. But yeah, very scary. I've not really seen much about that stuff before or been touched by it, but when you see what goes on and how it works, it's really scary. I didn't sleep that night. Mind you, that could have been the tequilas in the bar afterwards.
But I suppose it behooves all of us, right, as cloud professionals, to know what's bad out there, right? I don't think it helps anybody if we pretend that doesn't exist.
Yeah,
I think the dark web is a real thing. It does exist.
Sure.
And I think we should all learn about it and keep it in the back of our minds, because at some point or the other, you are protecting your system from those kind of bad actors, so to speak, misusing. I mean, who knows? There may be some of them may be using Azure. We really don't know, right, what some of these people do, whether they host VMs.
It's possible.
That are doing some of these special non-standard ports or whatever they use to, information around.
That's a great point, right? The VMs or the machines, that could be anywhere in any cloud. It doesn't matter, right?
Right.
Anybody can spin up a VM and leave it. If you don't secure it, just because it's in the Microsoft cloud or AWS, doesn't matter. You want to be sure that you have security around that monitoring, because anybody can log in remotely. Then it doesn't matter how secure everything else is.
This is a big problem where these phantom VMs, people have maybe purchased and forgotten about it, right? And they're lying out there.
Yeah.
Other people commanded it and take over and use them for their own malicious needs. Because other cloud vendors face the same problem.
Yeah, so stealing the compute.
Stealing the compute,
I think in the early days, things like Bitcoin mining were possible there, but I think the cost of running a VM and the amount of effort you've got to put into Bitcoin mining now is too great.
It's not cost effective to do that, really. So you're basically stealing the Bitcoin if you're stealing the power to mine something.
Yeah, and just to comment on the dark web, that's interesting because, though, it kind of ties in with the blockchain because, the biggest blockchain that got created or exists today is Bitcoin, and it was used for some rather nefarious purposes, still is. And that doesn't mean that, someone working in blockchain is also a nefarious actor. It's taking the good parts out of those systems and saying, hey, that's interesting, how can we use that for good?
Yep.
So that's the whole...
That's a good point. There's one thing that I learned out of that session was that blockchain is bad. I mean, Bitcoin is bad, maybe bad, but the technology on which it runs is rock solid, and that's the blockchain system. That is really rock solid, and that's what we want to try and leverage for other things, right? Peer-to-peer ledger systems.
Bitcoin itself is not bad. It's perhaps being used for nefarious purposes, but...
I suppose so, yes.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's just like pulling your systems about, but that's not something new. I don't think that's even new. Look at payment systems, and if you want to have an interesting read, go look at how credit card transactions got started on the internet, and it's not good things. And that's where that came from. But now it led to a system where we use that like water today.
What was that movie? This guy, Catch Me If You Can, on we're writing fake checks or like.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, you can use pretty much anything to do the nefarious things. So take advantage of loopholes.
But the difference with Bitcoin is the lack of a clearing bank or a central party, isn't it? It's going direct from one party to another with no traceability.
It's
not no traceability.
Yeah, exactly.
It's anonymity. It's fully traceable.
I think the interesting thing there is, though, and I won't say the Bitcoin guys are bad guys or whoever's good guys or whatever, but now people who in research who are saying, this is interesting, this ledger concept, this distributed ledger, now we're building technology that will make it anonymous. So it's we've kind of circled the whole way around there now.
Which obviously, they're doing it for good, but it's going to get repurposed for bad at some point.
I
guess.
Okay, very good. I think these are some really good topics, guys. Thank you for jumping in on that. Anything else that we want to cover this week that's pressing on anybody's mind here?
No, I think this was great. Thanks for our guests for joining.
Thank you, Rafael.
Russell in person. We finally, all of us got to meet him in person here, so that was awesome.
It's been a long time coming.
He does exist, yes. Russell does exist. We know that. All right, guys. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show.
If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.